This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And
they want to
see me pick back up. And it's the extra. We all are fine. Now I got it like that. Tuck my napkin in.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 22 of PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. I am your co-host, JT, coming at you here on this Wednesday evening, basking in the afterglow of another fun-filled WrestleMania vacation. And we'll be talking a lot about WrestleMania and its aftermath coming up here tonight. But first, let me go ahead and bring in one of my usual partners here on this show, and that is the Godfather, Nate Milton. Nate, how are you tonight?
I am doing well, brother JT, and yeah, man, we got a lot to talk about. This is episode 22, the Moses Malone episode, so not only are we going to do it for Doc, but we're going to do it for the city as well.
There you go, fo. And so, speaking of fools, I guess now, fo, okay. Steve Willey is off tonight. He had some work commitments, so he bailed on us, but it's okay, because we love brother Willey. Just won't be with us on this evening, but we do have a very...
Real quick, yeah, before we introduce our special guest.
Yeah.
Steve Willey is golden in my book, because this past week, I went to my mailbox, and what was waiting for me but an autographed Nia Jax baseball card? So Steve Willey can do no wrong. He has diplomatic immunity with the Godfather.
He was so excited to get that thing. I feel like he's been talking about it for months, and then he finally was somehow able to procure it and send it your way, and he was so pumped. So he was sending me status updates of the whole thing. The sending, the tracking, the receipt. So he was very pumped, and yes, it was a wonderful, the perfect gift for Nate Milton. But yes, also joining us, you heard him here, I think it was a couple episodes ago. He, of course, is a good friend of mine. He was with me in Orlando, and he is, I don't know, kind of the unsmooth operator of Place to Be Nation. That is Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato. Johnny, how are you?
Just like I thought, they were in the same spot in need of some desperate help. But Nate Dogg and the JT Child were in need of something else.
Is that you, the thing we're in need of? I guess so, right?
I should hope not.
Yeah, so how are you, sir?
Beautiful. Thanks. It was a wonderful Orlando excursion. We made it through the marathon together.
We did. It was a blast. And we're already booking next year. I was already looking forward to it. But let's get through tonight first. So tonight is going to be pretty much all WWE talk. There's a lot of news going on, a lot of shaking up going on, and a lot to break down and discuss. And we're going to have a great guest coming up in our next segment. That's Brandon Howard from Fightful.com. He's going to be here to talk business. We're going to talk a little bit about the WWE Network subscriber update. We're going to talk about the business end of WrestleMania. And we're also going to talk a lot about JBL and Mauro Ranallo and even Jonathan Coachman and everything going on with that. And if we have some time, we get some info on salaries of WWE stars as well, we'll get to. And then after the three of us, we'll go through the WrestleMania weekend, talk about the superstar shakeup, and maybe kind of where we see things heading over the next month or two on both brands, you know, with the rosters being mixed up a bit. So why don't we do this, guys? Why don't we go ahead and take a quick break? We've got Brandon holding on the line, so we'll bring him in after the first break, and we're going to dive all things business WWE while D'Amato finishes wrapping Nate Dogg and Warren G for us.
One of them dames was sexy as hell. He said, ooh, I like your
some
style.
Brothers put some gas, so I said, I'm stuck. Got these girls peeping me, I'm gonna glide and swerve. These hookers looking so hard, they straight hit the curve. Want to bigger, better things than some horny tricks. I see my homie and some suckers all in his mix.
I'm getting jacked, I'm breaking myself. I can't believe they taking Warren's wealth. They took my rings, they took my Rolex. I looked at the brother, said, damn, what's next?
They got my homie hemmed up and they all around.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us. and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nations, JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. All right, Nation, we are back here, episode 22 of Clotheslines and Headlines. Thank you, as always, for joining us. It's me, JT. We got the Godfather. We got Mr. D'Amato from the House of Whores match coming up soon on SmackDown. And, of course, also joining us, you heard him a few weeks ago as well. He is our good pal from Fightful.com, and he's in the middle of a hot training session, but he's taken some time out here tonight to join us. That is the illustrious Brandon Howard. Brandon, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us again. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, and I'm calling you from the school. I'm like I'm not by no means a big name wrestler or anything like that. But we do this little school here in the Buffalo area, and like I'm trying to train people. Where we got some kids coming along, so I love doing it. Awesome. And hopefully, you won't hear any bumping in the background.
It'll be okay, even if we do. It'll bring in that live experience, you know.
Yeah.
So, of course, Brandon is our business expert here on Clotheslines and Headlines, and we're going to talk some WWE business tonight. And the biggest business out there right now isn't really numbers related, it's not finance related, not ratings related. It is Be A Star related, right, Nate? I mean, what we got going on here is Mauro Ranallo vanished from WWE TV about a month-ish ago. Originally, it was said it was due to weather, and then it was that it leaked out he wasn't doing well mentally, and, you know, a guy who's been very open about his mental health problems in the past, and, you know, had a lot of support on Twitter as he tried to make his way back, and then further words started to leak when it revealed that he was going to miss WrestleMania, and things started to come out that it had been a result of bullying or, you know, issues with JBL. His partner on his podcast, Boss Rutan, came out and kind of was the first one to blow the lid off of that. And things have spiraled from there. And Brandon, do you want to kind of catch us up? Because you've done some, you know, a piece on Fightful, and you have some information around this. And I know you kind of covered the history of JBL and you know, the bullying in WWE. So do you want to kind of take us through that piece you did and bring us right up to current day with it?
Yeah. So I sat down, and if you go on YouTube and you just search like something like JBL shoot or JBL bullying on the YouTube search, you'll find just, you know, it's almost an endless supply of interviews with people from the past telling stories from the last 20 years in WWE about how they've had some, you know, unpleasant experiences of one kind or another with John Bradshaw Layfield. So, and there's been a lot of talk, you know, in various articles on Twitter, you know, we're even getting to the point where there's mainstream news starting to cover this. and they're referencing, you know, various stories that, that people are talking about, things that have happened in the past. So I figured I would put this all in one place to try to get a bunch of stories all together. So I've got a lot of different things from everybody, from, you know, Bully Ray talking about an experience that he had, you know, Mike Bucci, who's Nova, Simon Dean talking about experiences, you know, things he saw, the Hardy Boys, Edge, Justin Roberts, obviously, John Morrison, Billy Silverman, the former referee. The list really, really goes on and on about, you know, people who have been bullied in one form or another, or who at least witnessed it over the last 20 years since JBL's been in WWE, since about 1995.
Now, Brandon, as JT said initially, the story that was put out for Moro's absence earlier was, you know, the weather. He was having problems traveling with the weather. And while that proved to be bogus, I do think that the issue here is one of climate and climate within the culture of the WWE. And while JBL makes a deserved and easy punching bag, I always felt that this was bigger than him. You know, when you have a company where Michael Hayes can get away with calling Mark Henry the N-word, or where you can have a company where a production assistant can use a Mexican slur against Alberto Del Rio, or, you know, homophobic stuff can be spread about backstage. So is this something that should be a JBL thing, and he should be the one to bear the brunt of the outrage from the fans and the community, or is this a bigger deal?
I think it's definitely a bigger deal. I think all this stuff, from the things that I've seen, it comes from the top. I think, you know, it looks like JBL and Vince McMahon are buddies, and I think Vince McMahon probably approves of the stuff that he does. There's you know, one story about how Bully Ray tells a story about how he wrestled Bradshaw in a singles match one time, and he says that Bradshaw told him that just before he went to the ring, Vince was like, yeah, go in there and beat the shit out of this guy, and let's see what he's got. So, you know, then there's another story about the ex head of security from WWE who said Vince McMahon brought him in a limo before WrestleMania 19 in 2003 and tried to intimidate him. You know, so I think all this stuff is the culture that's been created by Vince McMahon. And it's not, obviously, as you said, it's not just JBL. And we can just look at recent history and look at where we had Bill DeMott had all those accusations against him for the way he was running the Performance Center. He had to resign. I think it's the culture that WWE creates.
Do you think we're getting close to the point now where JBL is going to have to take the fall and get fired? I feel like it's blowing up even more and more. Of course, our friend of the site here, David Bixenspan, did a piece on Deadspin today, and it seems like it's really picked up, and they've tried the whole, like, ignore it and hope it goes away thing, and it seems like we're getting a little too far removed now, or it's actually going the opposite course, where it's getting even more mainstream coverage. And then, of course, we'll get into the coach stuff in a minute as well, but do you think we're getting to the point now where they're going to have to do something?
I think so. I mean, I'm kind of an optimist. Not that I want to see somebody lose their job for the sake of it, but I think, you know, we saw what happened on Tuesday night where, you know, apparently he was introduced before the cameras went on, before they went live in the USA Network, and JBL was introduced. And when I've been to, you know, live events for TV in the past, his music plays, he comes out, everybody cheers him because he's, you know, in some ways he's a beloved figure to people who watch him on TV. And what we saw on Tuesday night, there were videos that were shot by people who were there in the seats of, he comes out and people booed, and there were chants of "We want Murrow." There were chants of "Fire Bradshaw" and things like that. I think like what the company's doing. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they think that WWE's going to try to just ride this out and just ignore it, and that definitely looks like what they're trying to do. But I think as we go forward, maybe people will forget about it. But I don't know, man. You're going to have fans going to SmackDown, JBL's going to get introduced, or JBL's going to be sitting there. We saw pictures of somebody last night who had a sign that said, "I was bullied by JBL" or something to that effect. And that guy was kicked out of the arena for having that sign. He was like right by the announcer's table. They removed him from the building as he's walking out. People were clapping. So, and then you see Deadspin pick this up, Sports Illustrated pick this up. ESPN looks like fools not touching this thing.
Right.
And that brings us to the coach, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, and even just a comment on the whole, signs or whatever, our Scott Scolo here from the site tweeted, something on talk to get on Talking Smack and did the hashtag cut JBL and the fucking thing ran on the crawl.
I saw that. Yeah.
That was Scott.
They're just blindly copying and pasting their tweets, I guess.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It has to be like a bot that just like pulls them. It must just filter the hashtag and post them, because I saw another fire JBL one too that went across. So they're clearly not looking at these things. But yeah, the coach stuff is interesting. So that really blew up a few days ago, where Coach basically backed up JBL and backed up the WWE and said he never witnessed any bullying and it's all bullshit or whatever. And he went on this mountain to die on that made zero sense to get on. Basically ended up quitting, claiming he's quitting covering WWE for ESPN and all this other bullshit. And he's still going at it today with, he called out Bix and then he's into it with Meltzer, and it's just... on, we were talking about this off air. On stories like this, to me, you're either against it or you're quiet. Like, to be on the defensive side of this thing is just never a good place to be.
I think Coach. I mean, there's pictures of like Coach and Jack and Bradshaw going golfing together. So it's very convenient that he decided. I think somewhere he said, he decided well before this that he was going to stop covering WWE. But you can choose to believe that or not. But it looks like he just doesn't want to have to talk about this or cover news that's unfavorable to his buddy. And I think who knows, maybe coaches, he wants to make sure that bridge is still there and still healthy in case he ever wants to go back to WWE someday. And who knows, there might be an open spot on the SmackDown team pretty soon.
Right. I think there is going to be. John or Nate, any other questions or comments on the JBL stuff, thoughts?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I think that JBL, I don't think he's going to get fired, because like you said, Brandon, he has that relationship with Vince McMahon. I do think the smartest thing to do would be to reassign him and kind of keep him out of the spotlight, because it's really hot right now. But I do think, in a couple months, this is a guy that, for all of his faults as a human being, he's done some good work with them. And I'm particularly thinking of like the Legends shows and the interviews and the sit down things that he does that can be some of the best things on the network. So I think they'll find a place for him. It just might not be at the SmackDown table right now. But the other thing, and I think it extends to a larger conversation, and it's kind of what Coachman was speaking to, and it's this divide between, I guess, the old school mentality and the new school mentality in terms of the way things are done. And I get that. I played sports in college. I played football and baseball, and I get that there's a certain level of toughness in these athletic endeavors. But at the same time, there's respect there, and where I think JBL and people in the company that share that mind frame, especially from a public traded company that has an anti-bullying campaign, like, there's a line that you can't cross, and I think too often we've seen people like JBL cross that line.
And that's the thing about WWE. They want to present themselves as this this benign corporate entity that is very family-friendly, it's very sponsor-friendly, They want to appear very benevolent. Oh, they do all these nice things for charity, such as Be a Star, this anti-bullying campaign. But deep down, Vince McMahon and the culture that he's created is still, in many ways, a very old-time wrestling carny culture, as much as Vince McMahon wants to say that he doesn't do pro wrestling anymore. He's in the sports entertainment business. Pro wrestling is what my dad did. But you see it manifest itself in situations like this, where they still, it's still okay for... And he's not wrestling anymore, but it was still okay a little while ago for JBL to give somebody a really hard clothesline to see if they would complain, because that would supposedly see whether or not this guy would fit in or not,
Well, it even goes to even like the ice pack thing with CM Punk. Like all these little traditions are still in there. And I think some of them will start to filter out as these guys, I don't say die off, because a lot of them die off, but start to really, vanish from the scene, and the younger generation takes over. Instead, we'll just get, threesome sex tapes. But, I think...
I was going to say, you say that, but you got a world champion on SmackDown that for a long time ran around pooping in people's bags.
Yeah, but he's part of that older guard. He still came up in that generation. I'm talking, the really young generation, when they eventually fully take over, and these other guys, Undertaker's already gone. He was one of these guys that you didn't hear much about, from bullying, but he was big on the locker room respect and the rules and the kangaroo
loyalty.
Court. And all that shit. But... it's prevalent in all sports, some of this stuff. You hear about the hazing, whether it's in frats or whether it's in college sports or even some pro sports, that it's a big problem across the board. Like, even beyond the old carny culture, it's really beyond, it's a big part of just locker room culture to have this shit still out there.
You know, I think what you see in JBL is probably somebody who came up in wrestling and who was subjected when he started out to a lot of the same things. He was probably hazed and had the shit beat out of him and was forced to drink or whatever. And so he, you know, it's sort of like an abused child who grows up to abuse his children. And I think at some point, I mean, you can only excuse somebody so far. At some point, you got to be an adult and you got to think for yourself and you have a responsibility to improve, you know, the world that you're a part of. And I think, you know, it's, you can say, yeah, well, JBL is only responsible for this so far. Some of it is the culture that he's a part of. But, you know, I mean, at some point you have to try to make wrestling better.
And you grew up playing football, too, which is, you know, part of that culture as well. So I'm sure that started there and then into wrestling. And then, But, you know, the interesting thing to me is you didn't hear a lot of this stuff in this second run of his until now. I feel like it all came out. Like, a lot of those things you referenced were all really from his initial run in the company. So it felt like once he left, and he was doing a lot of, like, the charity stuff, and, you know, he's doing the mountain climbing for the causes. He's, you know, he lives in, was it Bermuda or whatever, and he, you know, supports, like, a youth soccer. Like, it seemed like he had really kind of settled down and into more of a, I don't want to say philanthropist, but in some ways, you know, he was doing a lot of financial analyst stuff, and it seemed to be using his money for good. And then he even comes out, and, you know, Nate referenced, like, the good work he does on the network. At the Hall of Fame, he gave a great speech about Teddy Long and about, you know, problems of racism in the past, and like it seems like he's, you know, on one hand could be this really good guy, and then on the other hand he's just this evil bastard who does this shit to a guy that is known to have mental health issues, and then, you know, he's bullying him off air and forces the guy to the sidelines and probably out of the company. It's just a hard disconnect with the, you know, two halves of who he is.
This one really resonated with the fans because Morrow, in the short time he's had, has been so popular, and not to be disrespectful to, like, his past victims, like Billy Silverman and, you know, the other ones in the article. It was really people that the fans, Justin Roberts, you know, the fans were just meh about. But Morrow's is really brings a lot of entertainment to the product. So that's why the fans are pissed off, because it's like, hey, they don't get to, you know, hear Morrow every week. So that's why it's creating some momentum, this incident.
Oh, for sure. And I think part of it, too, is, along those lines, John, when you think of Byron Saxton, wasn't he moved because of issues with JBL bullying him and no one seemed to give a shit because it was Byron Saxton?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Right. And now, like you said, it's someone that the fans kind of revered, you know, half and half. They're, he had his detractors, but even beyond his commentary, just a guy who's very affable, easy to like, a guy who's a big wrestling nerd, a guy who's accessible on Twitter, he, you know, interacts with his fans, and a guy that probably has a lot of similar issues to many viewers out there as well. So they associated with him. So, yeah, this was one. JBL hit the wrong target this time around.
Yep.
As far as when it comes to bringing on a lot of heat from fans. And now he's gone on, you know, he's blocking everyone and anyone that uses certain hashtags or references the item. You know, and you got guys like the Young Bucks and many others out there trolling him as well and standing up for Morrow. So it's interesting, but, you know, Brandon, do you think, I mean, is Morrow done? Do you think there's a situation where JBL could be fired and Morrow brought back, or do you think he's good, done for good?
I think we probably have seen the last of Morrow. The vibe I get is I've read his contract is supposed to expire in August, but I think probably after all this and the stuff with the mental illness and the depression, the vibe I get is he probably wants to just be done with all this and not come back and probably not talk about it. Like, we'll probably not, at least not for a long time, hear Morrow talk about this. If I had to decide, I would say, yeah, I think eventually all this stuff will snowball to the point where JBL will get fired. Maybe not, as I think, like Nate suggested, maybe we'll see JBL just maybe, you know, repositioned in the company or maybe even suspended for a short time. But I know I think we've, you know, for better or worse, seen the last of Morrow on WTV. And you can, like, you think about the kind of commentator and the kind of wrestling fan that he is, I think you can really see how he probably didn't fit into W culture, or at least, you know, the Vince McMahon JBL W culture. He's a wrestling fan, he's a big Japanese wrestling fan, he knows the names of all the moves. You know, as you were saying, the things he does on Twitter, you can see how he would not fit into the guy, you know, NFL culture of WWE.
In retrospect, too, it seems like he might have been better suited as, like, a network personality. doing stuff like the Cruiserweight Classic, or maybe if they would have had him do the European tournament or host some shows and let him focus, almost like in what Joey Styles had been doing, like, you know, that kind of stuff.
Really, I thought he was fantastic on the Cruiserweight Classic.
Right, yeah. I mean, that was his highlight, him and Daniel Bryan calling that. So in retrospect, I wonder if he would have been more protected and better suited to do something like that versus being the voice of one of their main programs. But all right, why don't we pivot off of JBL Morrow here and turn to the WWE Network, since we're kind of on topic. The subscriber update came out a couple days after Mania, Brandon. You want to kind of talk us through that?
Sure. So every Monday after WrestleMania, of course, WrestleMania happens on a Sunday. So Monday, it's been the afternoon lately. Monday afternoon, they will announce the latest WWE subscriber count. So this year, it's 1.661 million. So, you know, almost 1.7 million. And they announce it at that time, because this is going to be the time where the network number is going to be at its highest all year. Obviously, leading up to WrestleMania, more and more people are going to subscribe, and then after WrestleMania, more and more people are going to cancel and what have you. So this is the highest it's ever been. As people become more and more familiar with the network and the technology involved with the network, I think it becomes more familiar in the average person's life. So we're still at the point where the network is becoming, you know, more and more ubiquitous for wrestling fans. So I think the question for the next couple years is going to be, I think, are we arriving at a steady state for the network? Are we getting to the point where maybe next year or in a year to come that the subscriber number is going to go down instead of just continuing to go up year after year? I think we're still a couple years away from that. So like I said, 1.66 million subscribers paid. That's paid. Of course, they like to tout that they had 1.9 million total. That includes about almost 300,000 people that were on a free trial. So you had almost 2 million people just about watching the network watching WrestleMania on the W Network.
Well, speaking of the free subscribers, Brandon, like what do you make, just from a business standpoint, of the practice of doing these, you know, free monthly subscriptions, particularly around events like WrestleMania? Like, I get that it brings people into the tent, but, you know, do you feel that they're retaining these people that are coming in and checking it out for free?
Well, I this year they had fewer free trials, even though the total number is bigger. They had fewer free trials this year than last year. So last year they had something like 300,000. This year they had 288,000. So I think what we're seeing is there's less people out there who are, if you will, virgin subscribers who have never created an account, a user account, to sign up for the network. So we're seeing, you know, less and less of that, because you only get the free subscription once. Now, just as I say that, I'm remembering that they had like various offers out there. You can get it for 3 months if you start at this point, 3 months if you start at that point. But I mean, that is one thing people have criticized the WWE for in terms of their business strategy. Like, you're giving away your most valuable property, your most valuable piece of content for free every year. I'm not as strong on that criticism. I think you get a lot of casual fans probably who maybe they wouldn't experiment with this network thing, you know, because they have to go on their game console and do something with it that they've never done, or they have to go out and buy an OTT capable device like an Apple TV or a Roku. I don't think it's that bad of an idea, at least at this point.
And I think too, to me, the bigger issue is that they don't have better safeguards. And I mean, this goes way beyond them, to prevent people from double dipping and just using a different credit card or a different.
Because all you have to do is create another email address account through Gmail or whatever, and then you've got a free trial again.
Right, and that's what a lot of people do, you know, and they brag about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, to me, that's the bigger issue. Then a lot of subscription services give you free trials. I mean, Hulu, Sling, Amazon, like, they all give you that free month or that free seven, you know, whatever. So it's, you know, it's interesting how they do it.
And, of course, the big difference between W Network and Netflix is that Netflix doesn't have a peak piece of content that happens once a year. You know, they just have a ton of movies that, and people have all sorts of diverse interests, but the WWE is this very specific, you know, subscription service.
Mm. And I think maybe the more interesting thing to me, and it's something I kind of had an experience with during WrestleMania, as I was, you know, talking to a buddy at work who is a, I guess, closeted / recovering wrestling fan. But was interested in Brock versus Goldberg. and he ended up signing up for the free trial on the network. But he's not a technically proficient person. But I think earlier on when the network first came out, you saw a lot of pushback in terms of the technology gap. And I think as we go on and people become more savvy with their electronics, it's less and less of a problem, which would probably lead to, you know, higher retention with their subscriptions.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying. I think as time goes on, we're gonna see year over year the network after WrestleMania and throughout the year in general, the metric that they look at prominently is average subscribers, you know, throughout the year, or if we're looking at a quarter, throughout the quarter. So that's just the daily average. If you took the number of subscribers through 365 days and you averaged it, this would be the number. At the end of last year, it was something like 1.4 million. So year over year, we're going to continue to see network subscriber growth, because I think this technology that you have to understand how to use to become a subscriber is going to become, you know, there's going to be less and less apprehension among consumers as time goes on. At some point, though, I think that is going to level off, and we're going to find out exactly what the steady state is. And it's probably going to be way less than the 3 million that they were projecting, you know, just as recently as, you know, a few quarters ago.
So outside the network, talking regular TV ratings here, it seems like they're on an uptick a little bit. SmackDown, I know, had its biggest of the year this week, not even the post-Mania week. Do you think that was interesting, the shakeup? How's the overall trend been in 2017 when it comes to Raw and SmackDown numbers?
That's something that actually I haven't been following as closely. I did see this was their SmackDown did over 3 million viewers.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, really in the neighborhood of what Raw does these days. Uh-huh. I know that was the highest since the draft. So I would, you know, it has to be the shakeup. The smart fan in me wants to credit Shinsuke Nakamura. But, you know, you would expect – so I've watched Raw ratings especially throughout the last few years, and the one thing that's basically a guarantee is that every Monday Night Raw after WrestleMania is going to be by far the highest rating of the year. Yeah. And I think now that SmackDown's becoming a show that's really, you know, worth watching, that has, you know, a discrete roster, now SmackDown's starting to see that as well. But, man, they topped it already – last night, because their rating was higher than the one post-Mania.
Yeah, well, I think we've seen like ebbs and flows of the Raw ratings, but it's been made up for by SmackDown being live on USA. Like, I think, and this is something JT and I have talked about numerous times on the show, Brandon, just the fact that SmackDown is live and feels fresher, and you got guys like a Nakamura now, or an AJ Styles, or even John Cena. Like, it feels like a show that you don't have to skip or DVR, whereas when it was on Sci-Fi, I can't tell you the number of times during the week I actually watched SmackDown live.
Definitely, it's live now, and you know, I think at first people were thinking, man, they're going to expect us to watch wrestling on Monday and Tuesday with no break in between, but you know, we can sit here and we beat up WWE quite a bit just in the last 20 minutes or so. But you really have to give them credit for this brand split, which a lot of people, probably including myself, were skeptical of. You know, they're going to do this brand split again. They're going to create multiple championships. Oh my God! But you know, SmackDown they've really repaired the ratings of SmackDown, and this is in a television environment where, in my opinion, you know, the television landscape right now is built on a decline. I think you're going to see Raw ratings going forward, and even SmackDown ratings from the point right now where they are at. You're going to see ratings just indefinitely decline. I mean, you're going to see obviously spikes here and there, but over the wider view, you know, year to year, you're just going to see these ratings and viewership will decline, you know, year over year until, you know, I don't know if there's a hard ceiling where traditional TV will, you know, become steady, but that's how it is. And a lot of people will point to the TV ratings and say, oh my God, the Raw ratings are down again. And, you know, last year they were up to a 3-point-something and now they're at a 2-point-something. And I think what's happening is a lot of people and maybe even younger viewers, I was looking at some of the demographics for the Raw viewership after WrestleMania this year versus after WrestleMania last year. And what you see is the younger audience, is starting to go away. The female audience goes up. Younger audience is going away. So what I think is happening is younger people are consuming WWE or Raw or SmackDown more and more, through YouTube or through Hulu or through various pirate sites, and less through actually turning on USA Network or whatever your local TV channel is in whatever country you're watching it. Although when we talk about ratings, the ratings that we are almost always talking about are the U.S., the United States ratings.
I mean, even stuff like Sling, like, I don't know, is that factored into Nielsen? I mean, USA Network is on there. I don't know if that counts if you know, as part of as a dish or DirecTV, whoever owns Sling. You know, it's like, that's how I watch.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Man, I'm not sure where that plays in. And I like the Tuesday thing for SmackDown. I think it was a shrewd move because you keep the momentum instead of having a show on Monday and then 4 days later or two or three days later. And, you know, for me right now, you're hot on Monday. You go right into Tuesday. And I think a big part of SmackDown's success as well has been the 2 hours instead of the three. I mean, that's a big difference. And honestly, yeah. Tuesdays has kind of become like almost a must-watch night for me between SmackDown, 205 Live, which I think has been pretty good the last, you know, in recent months. I think ever since Neville kind of became the center point of the show, and I think everyone else is starting to kind of find their way and find a character and make things work. And then Talking Smack is like a must-watch every week. So to me,
it's great. I love it.
Tuesday nights has become maybe the best night of the week when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah, as they say, they're super serving their fans. That's what they say on these conference calls, the business people talk. And then, you know, there's something to that. I mean, you look at Raw and SmackDown have a different feel to it. I mean, SmackDown is maybe a show that satisfies wrestling fans, you know, more like us who want a more, you know, a good, whatever that means, good wrestling product. And you've got 205 Live, which, you know, it can be hit or miss, but maybe it's getting better. I'm not going to pretend I watch it all the time, but, you know, it's cruiserweights. It's guys, you know, doing high-flying wrestling. But real quick on the ratings, just because I can hear somebody in my head yelling at me about how, you know, the ratings, you can't say that the ratings don't matter. Well, because eventually these TV contracts are going to expire, and then that's going to happen in about 2019. And that's their biggest source of revenue, is these TV rights contracts. And Raw and SmackDown's, you know, ratings performance, you know, will probably have some bearing on these negotiations when these contracts have to be renegotiated with, you know, with the USA Network. So who knows? You know, the CFO, George Berrios, has said, or at least hoped, that, you know, maybe going forward, live programming will become even more valuable in this landscape where scripted programming, the ratings of scripted programming, just decline and decline. You know, I think WWE, you look at, like, live sports are more stable, even though, you know, there's still some talk that maybe NFL ratings are starting to decline this past season. But he thinks, you know, he suggested that, well, maybe, you know, going forward, even while all these other regular TV programs that aren't live continue to decline, live programming may become even more valuable, or at least you can get similar money when the new contracts have to come up. So it could be, I mean, all these TV ratings going down could be a huge story that could spell a really big difference in how WWE has to do business. Or it could just be, you know, look, you know, maybe, you know, the moral of the story is WWE was doing the right thing to get their hands in the OTT business and to get their hands in the digital media and YouTube business and to continue doing live programming on USA Network on traditional TV.
I mean, yeah, that would be a big hole in USA's roster to lose both those shows at this point. But you also wonder if WWE would look at other alternative ideas. Like, if USA doesn't want to pony up, do they look to an Amazon or a Hulu and air on there, you know, fully at 9 o'clock, as well as maybe simulcast on the network an hour, you know, something along those lines, to go outside the box if those companies would be more willing to pay up. I mean, we just saw what it was Amazon, right, just paid a ton for Thursday Night Football. So I think it's, you know, that's something they could look at too. But I almost wonder if they'd be smart to negotiate with USA now, like in advance of 2019, about looking at an extension. I mean, the ratings are kind of up post-Mania. You know, there's a little bit of buzz around both shows. You kind of refresh things up. Part of me thinks, start talking now. Like, say, hey, why are we waiting to 2019 and why are we going to go out to make it public? Let's just stay here and renegotiate.
Especially USA still hasn't really generated any other hits. I mean, Raw and SmackDown are still two of their most popular programs. Like, they don't have like a Walking Dead or whatever. So the WWE is kind of
have you not seen Chrisley Knows Best, D'Amato?
Come on. I haven't seen anything worth watching on USA besides that.
Silk Stockings isn't walking through that door.
Up all night with Rhonda Sheeran coming through that door.
Murder, She Wrote could probably be pretty cheap these days. I'm sure there's still an audience out there for that.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
There you go. Brandon, the few minutes we have left, anything you wanted to, any kind of highlights or key points you wanted to talk about from Mania weekend when it came to business wise, whether it's attendance or revenue for the city, anything just quick you wanted to touch on?
Sure. Yeah. So real quick, we got the gates. So that's the ticket money was $14.5 million. And that is, even when you adjust for inflation, that is the second biggest pro wrestling gate of all time. Of course, that's second to the $17.3 million that they made at the gate for WrestleMania 32 last year in Dallas in the big stadium. And so just since we talked last, I got in contact with the Arlington, Texas police to ask them, you know, see if they would tell me what the attendance really was, you know, for this AT&T Stadium WrestleMania 32, which of course WWE says 101,763 people in attendance. And then Vince McMahon said on the conference call, well, okay, yeah, that includes staff and ushers and things like that. So what was really the paid attendance for WrestleMania 32? We know from some of the documents that they put out somewhere between like 74,000 and 85,000. But that's a pretty big gap, and that's paid attendance. Well, the Arlington Police Department told me that the turnstile count, whatever that means, we can get into that, but the turnstile count was 80,709. So that sounds to me like the paid attendance. I tried to ask them to clarify and say, well, can you be more specific about what that really means? And they try to push me off to the city and, of course, the WWE, which is a dead end. But, you know, so I think that that's probably at least pretty close to what the actual paid attendance is in terms of people actually paid for their tickets and went through the turnstiles. About 80,000, 81,000 people. And that's last year. I think this year, WrestleMania 33 in Orlando, they announced, 74,000 some odd. And I think that we'll know another range in a few months about what the paid attendance really was for WrestleMania. I'm guessing it's probably somewhere around 64,000. They did WrestleMania in Orlando about 10 years ago, and they actually published the actual paid number in one of their documents, and it was like 64,000. So it's probably going to be around there, maybe a little above.
Which are still staggering numbers. Like, it was like, oh, only 80,000 instead of, I mean, 80,000 is still a hell of a lot for like modern day wrestling product. I mean, that's
absolutely
insane, you know?
Absolutely.
Especially for a show that ended up being pretty panned.
Yeah. As we go further into the future, I think we see, you know, just the way that people consume products and the way that wrestling fandom evolves. We see the big shows become bigger and bigger, and the small shows, well, you know, become kind of smaller and smaller. I mean, house show attendance has probably been lower at other periods in wrestling history for WWE. But, you know, they do their 3,000 to 5,000 at house shows. House show attendance is slightly declining. So, you know, I think people understand more and more fans understand that house shows are not that important. You know, I know some people like house shows, but, you know, you can miss them and you're not going to miss anything. And, you know, as I think adults, maybe people like us who grew up as wrestling fans and now we've got jobs and we've got money to go fly to someplace for a weekend, you know, you've got more and more people traveling. So, and we see what they're doing with, you know, WrestleMania weekend, SummerSlam weekend, Royal Rumble weekend, Survivor Series weekend.
Which I think is brilliant.
You know, I think that's a good idea. They should do that. That's how you're going to get, you know, more and more money out of your customers. So that's where wrestling is. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say, just to me, the key to the house shows, like the whole reason that those should even exist, are for kids. Purely 100% to get kids engaged and hooked in the product. And they should do more and more, you know, meet and greets during the show. And, you know, like just take a look at indie shows. And I'm not saying you have to have guys standing in the ring with gimmick tables, but I mean, that's a big draw from some of those shows. Like if they had these guys out in the concourse to meet and greet with the fans, you know, with the kids during the show. Like to me, that is a big draw of the house show. That is a big reason to have house shows, is to have that kid-friendly experience. Like when I want to start getting my kids into wrestling, I'm going to go to house shows to start and gauge their interest before dragging them to a Raw or something where they can sit through commercials. Like to me, that is where they should be focusing their efforts. And I've said this for years. I think they're absolutely nuts for not having a WWE Network kiosk in the concourse of these shows. And have legends there. You got all these fucking guys on legends contracts. Have Jim Duggan or whoever, you know, Gene Oakland sitting on a couch with the network in the concourse as people are coming into the thing to show them how to use it. Hey, you know, we're going to have a tech there to say, you know, are you a subscriber? Yeah. No? Well, look how easy it is. And here, watch a match with Jim
Duggan.
Sign
up right now.
Right, yeah, sign up right here. We'll sign you up right now. You get a free month and then you're hooked. You know, in here, yeah. Watch a classic match with Mean Gene right now for a few minutes. It was like, to me, that it seems so easy, something to do. Or even if you're not going to have a legend, have someone on the card. Like, fucking send Xavier Woods out there for, you know, for 15, 20 minutes or whatever to build the crowd up. And then that's how you hook people in. Like, it seems so simple that I can't believe they don't do stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I've gone to house shows almost just to see what the difference is, and you do hear different crowd reactions in terms of, you know, the booing for Roman Reigns is not nearly as strong, and there are more kids and there are fewer you know, male adults. I think there's something, you know, something they could do is, you know, just maybe shoot an angle on one house show a weekend or something like that, and then show it on TV, and just to make people feel like these house shows aren't completely irrelevant, that if you miss it, you might miss something that has some bearing on what you see on TV.
All right. So that is Brandon Howard. Brandon, you have anything else you want to talk about or plug before we wrap up?
Sure. You can read I've written a bunch of things lately for Fightful.com. If you go to Fightful.com, you'll probably see right at the top of the page is a featured article that, things that we were referencing about JBL. I wrote an article about JBL. It's an oral history of the culture of WWE and JBL and the bullying that's going on. Basically, just a long collection of quotes of, you know, people telling stories related to JBL. If you go to the feature section on Fightful.com, you find my name, Brandon Howard. You'll see all the things I've written lately. I did some coverage of UFC 210 recently. That was in Buffalo, New York, and you can check that out on Fightful.com as well.
Awesome. Now your Twitter handle has changed as well, right? Do you want to share that?
My Twitter handle is Brandon Thurston, which is actually my real name. That's the name I wrestle as. And so that's what it is now. I had a different handle that was sort of a random collection of letters that was, hopefully this will be easier to understand and to explain on podcasts such as this.
There you go. So he is Brandon Howard, Fightful.com. Check him out on Twitter, Brandon Thurston. Of course, we'll have him back on here, you know, periodically to talk business. As I'm sure we'll have you. When's the next quarterly conference call? It's coming up soon, right?
It is, I think it'll be in May. So probably about the middle of May.
Okay, so we'll have to have you on for that as well once that happens, to break that all down. So keep an eye on Brandon on social media. Good luck back at the school training the up-and-comers. We'll let you get back to that. And we're going to take a break, guys. Me, Nate, John will be back after this. We'll talk about the Superstar Shake-Up. We'll talk our thoughts on Mania and where the WWE is headed.
Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliot's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
Welcome back to Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines, episode number 22. You know we keep cruising. You know we can't stop moving. It's like I got this music in my mind, guys, saying it's going to be all right. But then we got to shake it off because we are going to discuss the WWE's latest attempt at reshuffling the cards of their deck, which was the shakeoff we saw this past week. But before we get into any of that, fellas, let's do a little catch up and tell the people how we got here and you know, give some of our quick thoughts on the biggest event of the year, and that was WrestleMania 33.
You know, Nate, we've been doing podcasts together for years now. And, like, I've seen you do some real great work on these Christmas episodes and everything else. Your intros to these things never cease to amaze me, because I don't imagine you prepare them in any way, and I imagine you're so damn good at it, it just rolls off the tongue. I just want to give you that moment of appreciation for the amazingness of your abilities on these things.
And I appreciate that, brother. And I also, see, that's an example, folks. Like, that's two people working together, two broadcast colleagues, if you will. And instead of bullying me and hazing me and being jealous of my skills, you know, JR is supportive and appreciative. And that's how the world should be.
I save the bullying and hazing for the Place to Be podcast every Monday night with me and Scott Criscolo right here at PlacemanNation.com. All right, D'Amato, you were at Mania with me, bud. Give me your top three highlights from the show.
Well, obviously the Hardys. I should give three others besides them, because that's a Captain Obvious moment is the Hardys. But maybe not a top three moments, but the biggest surprises were the three matches that were mostly anticipated to be shit on, involving part-time lovers, if you will. All the part-timers kind of came through, starting with Shane McMahon and AJ and Triple H and Rollins and of course Brock and Goldberg. Those are three underneath the tag team. If you go to the next three best matches, you probably go with those three. So everybody that's, you know, shitting all of these part-time guys are taking over, but they actually shine. And meanwhile, one of the worst matches was the world title match, the SmackDown title. So
yeah, think...
so that's what I coming out of it was the part-timers came through, and I'm not like Mr. Criscolo, you know, one of the biggest Triple H fan, but I enjoyed that match a lot. Sure, he could have cut off a few minutes, but I was pleasantly surprised by that match. I mean, his boy came through.
And the part-timers, all they kind of used them the right way, I thought, this year. Like, I think that was a big benefit of as well. They all put over regular, you know, talents on the roster. Shane McMahon goes out there and has a really fun match with AJ Styles, loses clean. You had Triple H, puts over Seth Rollins clean. You had Goldberg,
the right results,
and Brock.
Right.
Goldberg and Brock, arguably maybe the greatest, one of the greatest, you know, sub 5 minute matches, or however long it ended up being, 10 minute matches of all time. And then Undertaker, you know, of course he's retiring, but he did the right thing. He could have easily demanded to go out with a win, and he didn't. He laid down for Roman Reigns, and you know, I think it was one of the best usages of those part time guys.
Yeah, I think so, and you know, kind of piggybacking off of D'Amato, I think this WrestleMania was much more enjoyable than last year's. It was certainly as long or longer, but I think that's just kind of a road that, you know, we can't go back down. That tube is out of the toothpaste bottle or jar, or however you store your toothpaste. But I think this was a WrestleMania that maybe was a little bit light on in-ring greatness, but it was high on memorable moments. And I know that's the cliche thing that, you know, the company was talking about leading up into this show, but there were so many great moments, from the Hardys to the Taker retirement to, you know, Brock and Goldberg exceeding my expectation. You know, the Cena Nikki thing, Gronk got involved, which, you know, gave them their Sports Center moment. Mm-hmm. You know, even something like Naomi, you know, winning and getting to do the entrance, you know, in the dark, right? Like, I didn't think she was going to get that moment. So I thought it was a lot of really cool moments. You know, it wasn't the greatest wrestling show I've ever seen, but as far as Manias go, it definitely wasn't the worst.
No, and they did a good job too. They eliminated a lot of the bullshit. I mean, there were no backstage segments. There was no backstage interviews. I mean, it was match. And, you know, people bitch about the concert, but even that was pretty quick, all things considered. And, like, the live crowd, I don't care what people are saying, whether it's, you know, Flo Rida, soccer, you know, however people feel about these guys, that crowd was into that concert. I mean, there were people singing and getting, you know, they popped huge when fucking Flo Rida came out. So
it's a catchy ass song, man. Like, I'm not a Flo Rida fan, but that's a catchy ass song.
Yeah, I thought it was a Mania that hit the points. I think, you know, for these shows, Mania is going to be bloated. This is just what it's going to be. I thought they did about almost as good as you possibly can with what they had to work with. And my biggest gripe is that if they were going to make the mistake of having Randy Orton win, you know, I think Bray Wyatt should have won. But if you're going to have the mistake of making Randy Orton win, make that a squash. Just have Wyatt come out, plays the mind games for a second. Maybe they do the bug thing, and then Orton hits the RKO out of nowhere and gets the win. And cut that down to like a minute. And I think that show, you know, comes off just a little bit better, because that was easily the worst match of the night, and it really kind of killed the flow there.
So have that play in the stadium, guys, because I was watching it at home, and it just it didn't make sense. It kind of took me out of the match, which wasn't a great match to begin with. But when, you know, when they start putting these pictures on the mat, was that something that came across in the stadium?
Yeah, the first time it's like, oh, that's pretty cool, and you know, people are digging it. But once it got to like the third time, not so much. And not only that, it's not something that it's going to make people like, you know, scream and get out of their seats. It's just like you're sitting back and you're like, right. Oh, okay, that's pretty cool. But it's not something that's going to, you know, pop the crowd. So, but and then like I said, they kind of wore it out. But by the end of the third, it was like, all right, we get it.
You know what that match reminded me of comp wise? WrestleMania 21 with JBL and Cena. Where the whole build and the payoff felt like it was going to involve like a whole bunch of nonsense. Like, you figured JBL would have the cabinet out there and there'd be mayhem. The way his whole reign had been craziness. And then This was a clean, bland match of John Cena won out of nowhere. And to me, this felt the same way. Like, I thought we were going to get, you know, I talked about it on the show, I thought we were going to get Sister Abigail, we get Rowan, we get Harper, you know, there'd be madness and brawling. And it just was a match and Orton won. So, the match itself didn't really fit the profile of the feud and the expectations. Like, it felt a lot like that match to me.
Yeah, not only that, for one criticism, I guess the placement of matches, I mean, three title changes in a row was a little bit much, you know, between, you know, then came Brock and then the ladies, all three of them in a row. So I don't think we'll ever see that ever again in three title changes in a row.
Nate, where do you put Brock Goldberg as far as, you know, how long did the match end up being? Was it under five or no? I forget the actual time, but as far as short matches go, do you rank it pretty highly or all time? I mean, I thought it was unbelievable. It was my favorite match of the night for sure.
Yeah, I thought they did a really smart thing in terms of, and I've said this on the Kings of Sport, like it wasn't a UFC fight in terms of technical expertise, but the way that the fight was built up and the way that the match was executed in terms of, you know, it can end at any time, it definitely had a UFC feel. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt a little bit more authentic, so to speak, than the other matches on the show. And I dug it. You know, Goldberg gave Brock his best shot. And then, you know, Brock was like, nah, we're not doing that this week. And came back and gave Goldberg his best shot. And it was over. And so I thought, you know, the hardcore, you know, technical fan of you know, that kind of catch-as-catch-can pro wrestling didn't really love that. Because I think between both guys, they maybe did a total of four moves or five moves. But as a sports fan, I thought they executed it really well. And it was done in a way that Brock was made to look strong and Goldberg was not made to look weak.
What do you think, John, as far as where that match ranks when it comes to all-time short matches?
Of course, it's got to be up there. There wasn't like one wasted move. Like every move could have been leading to a pin. So there wasn't no rest hold, no nothing. It was just cut to the point. It was perfect.
I think I saw somebody online that was like, it was like somebody was playing 2K17 and both guys had all their finishers stored up. And it was like, let's just hit each other with our finishers until somebody gets pinned.
The only rest hold going on was in the seat next to me. John.
No comment. But just watch it. Watching that back there, it was so scary. That leapfrog was so scary where, like Goldie's head just missed Brock's knee, and that could have been catastrophic.
When we talked about this as the match was going on, I thought the key to that whole match, honestly, was that there was no downtime after the barricade spot. Because a lot of times you get those matches, and they'll do the huge spot like that, and they'll have the medics come out, they'll lay around.
Outside the ring, yeah.
You know, and they didn't do that. They were up within seconds and back in the ring. And to me, that was the pivot point of the whole match, was that if they take any longer on the floor, I think the match turns a little bit and the crowd starts maybe getting antsy. But they didn't give you a chance to get antsy. They bounced up and were right back at it in the ring. There was no slow spots, like you said. To me, that was the most impressive part of that match.
Yeah, and it definitely made up for, you know, their previous WrestleMania effort. God. Like, I thought, you know, this was, like, it was kind of that UFC, that slash, you know, that heavyweight fighting boxing. It's like, you know, you've got two big dudes that are going to go out there and, as Dusty would say, they're going to start clubbering. And you know, it was a good match. It was a fun match, and I dug it. For what it was, I thought it was executed as well as it possibly could have been.
It was like Hagler Hearns, the classic match.
You know, Nate, too, you mentioned all, like, the moments. I don't know if you mentioned those, I'm sorry, but did you even mention that Undertaker's final moment in match? I mean, that to me, like, that was a big part of the show, too, that, you know, it was the end of his career. And even though it felt like he should have maybe been done earlier for, you know, it didn't happen. But all of a sudden, you know, word starts to leak out that this could be it. He was really hurting, and obviously that was made clear by the way the match ended. And I thought Reigns worked his ass off in that match. Like, it's one I want to rewatch on TV, but I don't know if it came across to you that way at home, Nate, but I thought it was Reigns putting in a hell of an effort to carry what was clearly a broken down and slowed up Undertaker. And I saw people and heard people, you know, blaming Reigns for the tombstone stuff. And to me, it was just, you know, it wasn't on him at all. Taker could not lift himself up at all at this point. And I thought Reigns really worked hard to bring that up to, you know, disaster level to being at least a serviceable main event.
I mean, you got, like, and all respect to The Undertaker, you know, one of the all-time greats. But, you know, you got a 50-year-old dude who is months removed from hip surgery. It's like, you know, did you expect him to go out there and have a five-star or six-star classic, you know? So I thought both guys did as well as they could. I think Roman is a guy that does not get a lot of credit for how much he's improved in the ring over the past year, year and a half. And so, yeah, I thought that the right guy won. I thought that at this stage of the game, that's probably as good as a Taker match as we're going to get. Yeah, he did the right thing by, you know, retiring and giving the fans of Orlando a little strip tease and, you know, calling it a career.
John, when do you think Taker should have retired?
Right after the Brock match, after 30.
You think that should have been it?
Yeah.
Even though we would have lost out on those couple of other Brock matches in 2015?
Yeah, I wouldn't lose sleep over that, though, yeah.
How about you, Nate?
That's a good question, because, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I think I would have given him one more WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And not have it be against Brock or against Bray the next year?
Yeah, I would have bagged that. I would have had him just beat Kane again or something.
I would have just had him come out a Kane or that Cena match that they were always proposing. Just have him come out, beat somebody, and you know, hey, I'm done.
Right. Or do Reigns at that point. You know, they could have done that.
Yeah, because it's better to, and it's, I guess it's the Patriots philosophy, you know, the way the New England Patriots handle their players, better to get out a year early than to stay a year too late. And I think, you know, again, all due respect to Taker, but this Taker that we saw at WrestleMania 33 is a guy that I think was in at least a year or so too late.
Yeah, and I think they wanted to do him and Cena last year, and then Cena got hurt. I mean, that's what it seems like. So maybe that would have been a good way for him to go out if he fights Cena, because then we wouldn't have had that awful fucking cell match with Shane, and maybe we feel a little bit differently about the tail end of his career. But, you know, it is what it is. So before we move on to this week's shakeup, John or Nate, any other final closing thoughts on Mania, kind of maybe where this Mania ranks for you all time?
I think, well, real quick, one last thing on Taker. Like, it's interesting because if you look at his WrestleMania trajectory, like, he started off with some of the worst Mania matches I've ever seen. Then in the middle, some of the best I've ever seen. And then it kind of tapered off after that Brock loss. So he's got this really weird... Or maybe it's not weird. Maybe it's the way a career would naturally progress.
Right.
The kind of ebb and flow of that dude at Mania. But in terms of WrestleMania 33 all time, I'd say it's a solid miss. It's a solid upper mid-carder in the history of WrestleManias. Like, it's not the best ever. And I think a lot of that is due to the length. Like, I was talking with Brian Mann about this show, and it's like, man, somewhere inside of that six-hour show, which was pretty good, it was a solid six-hour show, but there was an excellent, like, all-time great four-hour show inside of there. So I don't think it can be considered one of the best ever, but it certainly, I think, is in, you know, middle of the pack to maybe upper middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point in there at one point where it was trending toward being like a top five show. I mean, we were feeling that way there live, like, you know, after the Shane and Owens, and I think maybe around right after Triple H, we were feeling like, okay, this could be a classic. And then from there, it started to downturn a little bit. That was kind of the turning point. But then Goldberg-Brock, to me, picked it back up. And I think Taker Reigns is one that, over time, will come to be a little bit more respected as a match. I feel like in the moment, everyone's still so down on Reigns, and everyone, you know, was mad about the part-time thing and Taker looking rough. But I feel like over time, it'll be a little bit more accepted as, okay, this was Taker's last match. It's a great performance by Reigns, and it was fitting to close the show because Undertaker meant so much to WrestleMania. Like, I feel like people will come to grips with that more as time passes.
I think like Nate's bit before, the lack of a 5 or 6 star match, you know, keeps it from being like an all time Mania, but definitely like below the top 10, probably between 10 and 15 as far as overall goes.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And I think Brock Goldberg is close to being that match, honestly. Like, I think a guy like Chad, I think he had it over 4 stars, I believe, or at 4 stars. I mean, so that's not the worst. I mean, the best Manias all have like a 5, like you said, 4.5 to 5, whatever star match. So, yeah, I think you're right, John. I think it puts it in that range right outside the real, real upper echelon of Manias. And you can read what we thought were our Manias on our WrestleMania list of Mania, what were the best shows. Of course, we did 33 lists in 33 days, so check that out. All right, so why don't we move on to the night after Raw. I thought was the Raw after Mania, I thought was pretty standard this year. Anything stand out to you guys that's worth commenting on from that show? Besides the obnoxious crowd?
Yeah, well, the crowd, but also just Roman Reigns kind of owning the crowd with 5 words. Like, I loved that opening segment with the crowd just chanting for Taker and then Reigns coming out. And every time, like, you could tell he was playing with the audience, you know, pulling the mic up and then putting it down. And then finally, you know, this is my yard. I'm like, you know what? I really like where they're going with Roman Reigns, and I hope they keep this quasi-heel thing going. But then that was all rendered obsolete this week with the damn ambulance angle. So that's my fault for hoping as a wrestling fan.
Yeah, but wasn't the ambulance stuff worth it? That was an awesome attack. That was an awesome attack. Do you think – how long – let's take bets right now, over under 4 weeks, John. How long is Roman Reigns out selling this thing?
Probably till May. He'll probably be off the April pay-per-view and probably come back for the May pay-per-view.
What do you think, Nate?
I'd like to think they would have him sell this thing, but I think he might be back
Monday.
Yeah, right by payback.
No, I think he'll be gone for at least a week, but he'll be back by payback.
Before payback. Yeah, they can't have no title match and no Roman on the payback.
Yeah, he'll be back.
Oh, well. All right, so here's the shakeup that went down this week. We had a superstar switching between brands. Here are the ones that went.
You forgot the best thing about post-Mania, whether it was Raw or SmackDown, to me.
The beach ball?
Oh, the beach ball was
beach
great.
Beach ball mania? Beach ball mania?
Beach ball mania was running wild, but your man Nakamura.
Yes.
That was, to me, even though it didn't make sense after the shakeup, considering they kind of redid the same thing, but that introduction when The Miz was in the ring, I thought was one of the better introductions they've done in a while.
You know, it's funny too, because it almost makes it more real in a way that I know it seems stupid, like, oh, why would they start Nakamura Miz if they knew Miz was moving? But it almost makes it more realistic that these guys were going to start a feud and then Miz got traded. Like, it's in a way, in a kayfabe way, it almost speaks more realistically that this happens, I thought. Like, even Owens and Jericho, they're going to fight at payback. But, you know, then Owens got moved. So, you know, or whatever. So the feud gets cut off. So in a way, it seems stupid from like a meta point of view. But on a kayfabe point of view, to me, it kind of works. It makes it seem more realistic that these trades happen and fuck things up. That it's not all smooth.
I like your explanation, but I think you put more thought into it than they did.
Of course, way more. They just said, fuck it, we don't care. That afternoon, they decided to move The Miz. So here's who went from one other thing I want to talk about, too, circling back to Mania. Cena and Nikki, that whole thing, I mean, to me, that was all well worth it because they've had gotten so much coverage out of that, whether it's the Today Show, you know, all the magazines, the rags that are out there from the tabloids and stuff like that. My mom texted me the next night, and she never has asked me anything about wrestling. Like, she had no clue. I had to explain to her 15 times what I was going to Orlando for. She texted me and said, what was it like seeing the engagement from Cena and Nikki? I'm like, how the fuck do you know? And then my uncle, we had Palm Sunday dinner with my aunt and uncles. And my mom mentioned it, and he's like, "Oh, you saw that live?" I'm like, "How do you know about John Cena?" He's like, "Oh, I saw it on the Today Show." I'm like, these are people in their 60s that have, you know, no interest in wrestling, really. At least since maybe, you know, my uncle, maybe since like the 80s or something, were fully cognizant of John Cena and Nikki Bella getting engaged at WrestleMania. Like, it blew my mind.
Yeah, they love that mainstream press, and the Gronk thing, too, was all over ESPN the next day, too.
So right, yeah, he brought that up, too. He's like, "Oh, you saw the Gronk thing." Like, that was, you know, he had heard of it. So, to me, that's, I mean, and he's not, like, super news and sports savvy, you know what I mean? He reads the paper for the sports the next day. He's not checking online. So, like, it really surprised me when he brought those things up. I'm like, wow, that's some pretty good reach that they got out of these things.
Yeah, and then, like, to your point, and to Brandon's point earlier, talking about the female increase in viewers to Raw and SmackDown, Marcus, my tag team partner on the Kings of Sport, went down to Mania with his wife. And that was one of the things she was most interested in, seeing seeing the match and the proposal, because, you know, she followed it on Total Divas and Total Bellas. So, yeah, it might not have been the greatest thing for, you know, the hardcore fans, but it served a purpose.
And even then, I mean, it was still a great feud. Like, all the stuff Miz was doing with Maurice, like, I think that served the hardcore portion of the audience. And the crowd there, I think, to me, was impressive overall on the night. I thought it was one of the better Mania crowds as far as, like, not being super snarky and over the top. I thought it was a very just kind of upbeat crowd that was having a lot of fun. The only time I got kind of...
John Cena used her government name. Like, I was just happy that he didn't say Nikki.
So Nicole. The only reason the only time I thought that the crowd got kind of shitty was in that in between Cena winning and then the clear proposal. Like, they were kind of being assholes. But then once he dropped to the knee...
That was the guys. There were a lot of women crying. The chicks were into it.
Well, to me, once they
really
got to
the... And screaming.
Once they got to the actual proposal, I thought the crowd turned around and I thought they cheered and gave him a nice reception. But for that, like, 3 minutes in between when Cena was giving the speech, I thought they were kind of being pricks. But I thought that was the only time of the night. Like, a lot of these recent Manias, I thought the crowd has been way self-serving. I didn't think this crowd was at all. My take.
Yeah, I was just hoping for a J.J. Bella run in. Stay away from my sister!
Or a Johnny Ace. Johnny Ace run in. Give Cena the Ace pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Stay away from my stepdaughter. All right, here's what happened in the shakeup. Here's who went from SmackDown to Raw on Monday. Miz and Maurice, Dean Ambrose, who has now been separated from his wife, as we found out, with him and Renee Young, recently got married. Bray Wyatt, Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, Apollo Crews, Kalisto, Heath Slater and Rhino, who I didn't even know Rhino was still around, honestly, and Kurt Hawkins. And from Raw to SmackDown was Kevin Owens, Charlotte, New Day, Rusev, Lana, who claims now to have been sexually assaulted at Logan Airport.
TSA, oh boy.
Sami Zayn, The Shining Stars, Sin Cara, Jinder Mahal, and Tamina. So, John, any jump out of you as having surprised you on both sides? Ones that surprised you that happened, and were there any you were expecting that didn't occur that surprised you that they didn't happen?
Yeah, well, I fell into the rumor mill that AJ was going to Raw. So I was kind of accepting, but I was pleasantly surprised that he didn't. And as far as ones that could open, you know, I didn't think Sami Zayn was going to go to SmackDown. I figured he'd continue just being a pain in the ass to Kurt Angle and, you know, always crying out, you know, Stephanie's keeping him down and stuff. So, and then just to go to SmackDown and reunite with Owens again, it seems a little stale. But I'm sure, hopefully they'll have something better in store for him. Because being that there's the Money in the Bank this year is going to be a SmackDown one, so he's going to be perfect for that, and I'm sure he'll shine in that match.
How about you, Nate? Any of that surprised you either way?
Well, I think the biggest move that was made, and it's kind of funny that sometimes the biggest moves you make are the ones that you don't make at all, was keeping AJ on SmackDown.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because, again, you know, that was something that was heavily rumored, and according, you know, some folks I talked to, like, that was on paper going to happen, but at the last minute it didn't, which I think is great for SmackDown because, yeah, they would have been able to survive without AJ, but it's funny. In a year, I think he's the heart and soul of that show.
Agreed.
And so I'm glad that he stayed on SmackDown. I think a lot of the people that came to SmackDown are going to be better off, whether you're talking about a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn or Rusev. Even somebody like Rusev. even though I don't know what the hell they're doing with Lana. Like, the promo made it look like she was stealing Summer Rae's gimmick. The New Day coming over, I think that gives them, you know, a fresh coat of paint. So I think the people that come to SmackDown are probably really happy right now, because not only do they get, you know, some fresh matchups and a new environment, but they also get talking smack, which is a big help. But the people on Raw, man, I think you got a lot of losers going to Raw. Not that they're losers, but I think the fact that they're going to Raw without a plan makes them losers. And I'm thinking of people like Apollo Crews. Mm-hmm. It's like they didn't have any plan for him on SmackDown. They damn sure don't have a plan for him on Raw.
Apollo lose.
Kalisto. I don't know what the hell they got planned for Kalisto. I think maybe the best acquisition that Raw got
Alexa.
Might be
Miz.
Alexa.
Yeah. Miz.
No,
Miz,
well,
Alexa,
Miz,
yeah.
But I think he's going to get marginalized. I think
Miz was better off on SmackDown, where he felt like a top guy, and now on Raw, he kind of feels like he's back in the middle of the pack.
Yeah. No, I think that hurts him. After Monday, everyone's like, oh, SmackDown's getting gutted. Who are they going to get? I think when you read these lists, I think SmackDown made out. Keeping AJ, gaining Nakamura, and then packing on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Rusev and New Day. Like, to me, they really rebuilt a lot of that car that needed some building up. And, you know, they're probably going to lose Cena now again for a while. But I think bringing Owens over really helps. And I think Owens for talking smack is a big pickup. You know, like that really was pretty cool. You know, it'll be interesting what they do now. They kept all the Shield guys together. One of the rumors was AJ going to Raw and Reigns maybe going to SmackDown, or even Brock going to SmackDown. That didn't happen. You know, I think at some point we're going to get the Shield reuniting. The one thing I was surprised about was Owens moving, because it kills the potential for that Triple H stable that had been talked about so much, when that was Samoa Joe, Kevin Owens, and, you know, maybe a Pete Dunne or whoever. That had been really, you know, heavily rumored. So I was surprised that they broke up the pairing of Owens and Joe, because they had really had them working together quite a bit.
Yeah, they didn't follow up with Triple H given Owens the rub, and now all of a sudden he just leaves without any explanation for like Triple H. So
yeah,
that was strange. Yeah,
like, it was his grand plan to help Triple H and then lose the Undisputed title and then win the United States title and move to SmackDown. Like, that doesn't seem like a great plan.
I am curious if this leads to something between Angle and Triple H, where Angle's the one who traded Owens. Because they haven't really even explained how these moves were made. I mean, they kind of hinted at it, that the GMs were behind them, because, you know, Angle was saying there's a lot of interest in you to Sami Zayn, and the way Brian was talking, him and Shane were talking smack, was like they brought Owens over. So there seemed to be, you know, kind of silently explaining that the GMs negotiated these moves. But
I think that was the biggest flaw, though, on both shows, JT, because, you know, yeah, the draft show is kind of tired at this point, but at least with the draft, you know how moves are getting made.
Right.
With this, you know, it's like if I just walked on to Main Event one week and took the mic from Scotty.
That'd be awesome.
It's like, you know, hey, you know, it's like, hey, I'm here now. Or if I went to Survey Says or any of the other shows, it's like, Why did I get here? Who sent me here? Who accommodated this? You know, we didn't get those answers, and maybe we'll get the answers, but I think for the most part, we won't get any explanation as to why these moves were made.
Especially Bray wasn't even there. They just sent a video telling Finn Balor, I'm coming for you. After I lose my SmackDown title House of Horrors match, I'm going to call Finn Balor. It's like, come on.
And then sent a video to Randy the next night. So he was putting in overtime in the studio.
The whole thing was way rushed. I mean, they should have just gone through Payback, done it in May, let the Mania buzz settle down, and put a little bit more thought into this. It felt like they did it just to get it done. The one thing I do like is how they made it feel territory-ish. Like, you know, Charlotte lost on her way out. You know, like, New Day lost on their way out of the territory. So they are making them – they've done a good job making Raw and SmackDown feel very different. I will give them that. They didn't get any interpromotional matches at WrestleMania, which I thought was unique. So they've done a nice job keeping them apart and making them feel different enough that we are sitting here saying, oh, this really hurts so-and-so, or this really helps so-and-so, because they do feel like very different shows. So I think that part of it's helped quite a bit. I think the most intriguing part of the moves for Raw will be what they do, if they do anything with the Shield. Like, to me, that'll be the thing I'm looking at to see what happens out of this shakeup. from a Raw point of view. So why don't we take the last 10 minutes or so here to talk about where we see things headed between now and SummerSlam. So, I mean, that's the next big key point. We don't have to talk about every month, but overall, John, where do you see Raw and where do you see SmackDown headed? Say, talk like the top two programs, maybe the world title and then like the B program or 1A, 1B program that'll happen in Brooklyn.
I'm going to start with SmackDown, and now I'm going to jinx it because this is something I want to see like more than anything, and once I predict it, it won't happen. AJ taking the belt from Randy, like in one of these May or June promos, and setting up a big SummerSlam with Nakamura. And that would be like the best card, the best match on the card, and SmackDown would have that in the house. So right now they have AJ scheduled to go up against Owens for the U.S., he probably won't take it. I see him challenging Randy next and taking the belt from Randy and then having AJ Nakamura for SmackDown.
How about Raw?
And for Raw, I think they're going to stretch out the Braun-Roman ordeal. I think they're going to stretch it out to SummerSlam.
Oh, wow.
And that'll be and probably with maybe the title not involved. And I don't have anything for Brock at this time. Or if Brock does put the title up for SummerSlam, maybe you guys can shoot some ideas, but yeah, I don't have anything for that now. But I think they're gonna stretch Braun and Roman out, and they're gonna save Roman and Brock for Mania next year.
See, I really thought they were gonna ship Roman to SmackDown and do Roman Cena at SummerSlam to get that out of the way and have Roman beat him to set him up for Brock eventually. I don't know. I'm thinking because they kept Roman and Brock on Raw, I think we may get that at SummerSlam now. I think we may get. You know, I can't see Brock holding it for a year. I'd be really surprised if they have him go that long. And then are they really gonna have Reigns win the fucking Rumble in Philly again? I just I can't see it.
Yes,
like, I know, but yeah. I feel like it wouldn't shock me if they accelerate things and do Roman Brock in Brooklyn, and then maybe do Roman Cena at Mania. Like, I think they'd invert what my original thought was. And then I mean AJ Nakamura I think is definitely possible when you look at the SmackDown roster. They're not gonna do AJ Cena again. And when you look at the top of that roster, outside of Owens and AJ Owens feud, I think AJ Nakamura makes the most sense, John. Like, I don't think it's, you know, I hate to jinx it like you, but I think there's a chance.
Oh,
that,
man,
that's what
please.
It is. What do you think, Nate?
Please.
I think there's a reason that we saw both on Raw and SmackDown a de-emphasis or a de-emphasization, if I can coin that phrase, of the universal title. And that's because I think Brock's going to be low key for a while. Like, you saw Kevin Owens and was it Ambrose talking about the importance of the IC and the US belts. And those were like kind of positions as the top belts in the company. Like on SmackDown, we saw a number one contenders match, not for the world title, which we saw Randy Orton there. They could have easily had that for the world title, but for Kevin Owens US title. So I think, Brock and Reigns is still the plan, but I think they're going to make us wait. And I think you'll see obstacles come up. Maybe Roman gets through Braun or something, or maybe once that's done and all settled with, he goes and helps Rollins out against Triple H, and maybe we get a mini Shield reunion before Ambrose turns. Because I do think Dean at this point needs something to freshen up that character. So maybe we get Roman and Dean for a while, but I think they're going to make us wait for Brock and Roman. I don't know how long, but I definitely think it'll be, man, at least we'll have to wait at least longer than the summer. But in terms of SmackDown, I love the idea of Nakamura AJ, but I love it so much. I want to save it for Mania in New Orleans. Mm. Like we talked about WrestleMania 33 and the kind of lack of that five-star match, you got one right there. Like, I think that it's going to be hard for them to resist putting him, you know, in a main event one-on-one match. But if they do it right, I think you could build this thing, man, and have, you know, a match of the year candidate at WrestleMania next year. So that'd be my
hope. Do it twice, Nate. See, I'm burnt now on this whole saving stuff because of the injuries and the style. No, but I'm serious because the way they keep trying to save these matches and guys keep getting picked off. Like, you can say I want to save AJ Nock for next year, but you know, there's like a 50-50 shot. One of those guys goes down before
that. Not only that, you could have more than one match. Like,
right, do it twice.
I'll take AJ. Shit, I'll take AJ Cena again. Yeah, right. Wrestle three times. I don't. If guys got it going on, then you want one. You know, some guys you never want to see wrestle again. But shit, you could have more than one match. Sure.
I think the guy they're building on SmackDown, unfortunately, and it's nothing against the guy personally, but I'd rather see somebody else in that spot is Baron Corbin. Mm-hmm. Because SmackDown's a show that really has a lack of top quality heels. Like, you got Owens, you got,
I guess, Rusev,
Bray, kind of sorta. You got Rusev, and then
Ziggler.
There,
like Ziggler.
Like, does anybody buy into Ziggler at this point?
Nah, no. He's getting fed to Nakamura, you know.
Yeah, I think Baron Corbin's going to be the guy that they build up. So I don't know when it's going to happen, but I think Baron AJ is something that they definitely have on their radar.
Yeah, it'd be interesting what they do with AJ if they turn a face at all. I mean, you wouldn't think so if they're going to have a feud with Nakamura. But maybe they do something where him and Nakamura do fight at SummerSlam, and then maybe AJ turns and they join up, you know, and they kind of redo their Bullet Club ties or something like that. Are you surprised the club didn't move to SmackDown with these other guys? So I guess they're still there with Balor, so they could do something with him. But
yeah. I don't know how far they'll go into that, because Balor's hot on his own, whereas with the club, whatever momentum they had, I think the Revival came and took it. Like, that spot that was filled by Gallows and Anderson, the Revival just came and took that spot as the top heel tag team.
And speaking of Finn, what do you – sorry, go ahead, John.
No, I say AJ is, like, so balls hot now that there's no way the club – how much more hotter can the club make him, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. What do you see happen with Finn Balor? Like, we haven't really talked about him yet. Does he quickly move up the card? You know, he's already got the concussion after the match with Jinder, but do you see him quickly moving back into the title picture? Does he do something?
Definitely. Well, you know, after this thing with Bray is over, I mean, there's a candidate. Maybe him challenges Brock at SummerSlam. So yeah.
What do you think?
There's one. It gets done with Bray, but as long as he stays healthy, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Finn versus Brock would be a hell of a match, although I do worry for Finn's safety in that matchup. So, yeah, I think Finn and Brock is an intriguing matchup, because that's going to be the task for Raw. If they do want to build to Reigns and Lesnar and Mania, they got to find guys that are credible enough for the fans to buy into challenging Brock, but also guys that, you know, Brock's ultimately got to beat.
Well, it'll definitely be interesting where things headed into Brooklyn. So we got a couple of minutes left here. Anything you wanted to cover to some, you know, anything we haven't touched on yet, whether it's the shakeup, whether it's the direction of SummerSlam, any, you know, talent we haven't touched on yet. What do you think of Kurt as GM, Nate?
I don't know, man, because I like Kurt Angle. He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And, you know, both in the ring and on the mic, I think he is exceptional. But with this character, I think they're going to have to walk a fine line between having Kurt be entertaining but not be too goofy.
Right.
Because, you know, we all know Kurt can do comedy. You know, anybody that saw that Hall of Fame speech knows Kurt Angle is a funny dude. But this role, to me, is something where, you know, you got to kind of play it like Foley. Like, Foley could be funny and fun at times, but he also had to have backbone, you know, to stand up to Stephanie and Triple H. And granted, we haven't seen that confrontation yet, but I don't want Kurt going too far into silly Angle where, you know, it's this jarring snapback when Kurt ultimately has to kind of cut that, you know, piss and vinegar, you know, fire and brimstone promo against the Authority.
I mean, do you think, you know, we haven't talked about him for a potential SummerSlam match, John. Do you see something with him? I mean, him and Samoa Joe at some point, maybe?
Yes, definitely. They're breaking him in kind of slowly, like he's only doing like 2 minute segments at a time. But I think eventually, when Stephanie comes back, or maybe even if Triple H gets back in the picture, they're definitely going to lead up to a big match for him at some time. And that's one candidate right there, Samoa Joe.
Yeah, you know, this is all leading up to Triple H versus Kurt next year in Mania, and Triple H wins and then shakes Kurt Angle's hand.
That's enough. You know, I'm out on SummerSlam right now, John, but an Angle match, mate. Just like the Hall of Fame, it dragged me back in. I don't know. It may drag me back to Brooklyn if
oh, boy.
Kurt wrestling a match. We'll see.
Yeah. And AJ Nakamura, come on.
Yeah, get that ticket finger ready. So guys, great chat tonight. This is a lot of fun. Of course, usually here on the show, we do touch on other promotions. But, you know, it's a little bit of a quiet time right now, post-Mania. It's not a lot.
Wait a second. We went a whole show without Nate mentioning Nia Jax.
That's right, Nate. What happened to Nia on Monday? This match with Charlotte. A lot of negativity out there on the Twitter sphere.
I mean, it's a lot of hate out there online. It's a lot of people, you know, disparaging my future ex-wife's wrestling abilities and talents. And, you know, that's why, you know, much like Michelle Obama, a former first lady, said, when they go low, we go high. You know, we rise above hate like John Cena taught us to. So I do think, though, you know, you talk about people moving from Raw to SmackDown. I think maybe one of the biggest moves that might not get any attention was Mickey James, because I do think you're going to see Mickey and Nia paired up, if not on TV, on the house show loop, because mm-hmm. I think Mickey's the person, the veteran hand, to kind of work out any of the kinks that Nia has, and I'm just going to let that comment sit there and enjoy my wordplay.
I think Charlotte to SmackDown is an underrated one, too. I think that was a really good pickup for them, because we'll get her and Becky now in a feud. I think that'll be good. Yep. Charlotte's feuds were all played out big time on Raw. Like, we're just done with her and Bayley. We're done with her and Sasha. And it's clear now that Sasha's going to turn. We're going to get Bayley, Sasha on top. And we'll probably get Alexa, Mickey, and Nia in that middle grouping. And over on SmackDown, you know, things will continue. And we get Naomi up there, too. So it'll be interesting to see where they go. But I think that was a nice pickup.
Back, so we got some unity. I hope they bring that back in honor of the late great Charlie Murphy and the Rick James skit.
What'd the five fingers say to the face?
All right. So great conversation, John. I want to thank you for jumping in here on short notice to join the crew. Of course, regularly here on Clotheslines and Headlines. Appreciate it as always. The Godfather, always as smooth as silk. Want to thank Brandon Howard as well. We will be back in 2 weeks. And at that time, of course, we will re-expand our coverage as things start to pick back up around the wrestling world. I'm sure we'll touch on some ROH, and maybe Steve's back. We'll hit some Chikara. Maybe TNA will actually have something interesting going on by that point. We'll find out. It's been kind of quiet down there in Universal over the last few months, so ever since the big shakeup. So we'll have a lot to talk about as we move forward, but we wanted to kind of do this decompression on all things WWE coming off of Mania. I think it's a good time to kind of, you know, reset the blocks a little bit and see where we're at going forward. So big thanks to Brandon Howard. There's a lot of great info during that segment. Make sure you follow him on social media. Really interesting out there covering the business end of wrestling. And thanks to the boys here. Steve, we missed you, but not that much because John was pretty damn good. So we'll be back 2 weeks, closing the headlines. Be sure to check out everything at PlaceTomination.com each and every day. Social media, Facebook.com/PlaceTomination. Twitter, Place2BNation as well. For Nate, for Brandon, for Mr. D'Amato, the king of the whole house, I'm JT Morrell. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Game. Blouses. Shake it up. Shake it up.